Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Margaret Cesaire Thompson. Cesaire Thompson was born in Jamaica, West Indies, and is currently professor of English literature and creative writing at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. She's the author of two highly acclaimed novels, which focus on her native Jamaica, The History of Paradise, and her most recent, The Pirate's Daughter, published by Unbridled Books in October of 2007. The Pirate's Daughter recently won the 2008 Essence Magazine Award for Fiction. I'm speaking to Margaret Cesaire Thompson by phone from her home in Massachusetts. Welcome to the show, Margaret Cesaire Thompson. I'm so happy to have you with us.
I'm happy to be with you.
Now, I want to begin with what inspired you to begin writing?
Oh, let's see. It's hard to say. I was just much more of a writer than a talker growing up. Came from a big, noisy family. And writing was, I suppose, the best way for me to communicate, uh-huh. communicate the things that I felt.
Uh-huh. And did you start out writing poetry?
I did, actually. I was writing poetry really all through my growing up years, and then switched to writing fiction sometime in college, in my senior year as an undergraduate.
Mm-hmm. Now, your work obviously has been influenced by your native Jamaica. So tell us about your fascinating first novel, The True History of Paradise.
The True History of Paradise is a novel that's really very close to my heart and probably more autobiographical than this second novel. It takes place during 3 days in a state of emergency in Jamaica in 1980-81, and this is a difficult period in Jamaica's history that I remember mm-hmm. quite well. And as the protagonist is journeying across the country over 2.5 days, the story of her family's history is told, but also I use that as a way of telling 500 years of Jamaica's history. Various things in the landscape bring things back to her, but also the ancestors in her family going back 500 years, you know, to people, to early Spanish settlers, early English settlers, through African slaves and so forth. They all tell her their stories. Mm-hmm. So it's a way of me telling about contemporary Jamaican history as well as a personal history and trying to put together the various threads of Jamaican history going back 500 years.
Mm-hmm. Was this a book that had been brewing inside you for many years?
Yes, there was a particular story and time that had been brewing in me. I actually kept trying to write it as a short story about these two sisters for a long time, and then as I got more and more perspective on Jamaica's history and on those violent years, that's when I realized I really needed to write something larger, and I turned it into a novel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, the book is certainly not something that the Tourist Bureau would be happy with. You do talk a lot about violence.
Although, and,
yeah.
Really, I've also heard that, because that's the thing with me, I'm so drawn to the beauty of the country, but was also disturbed by what was happening at the time, that those two things are always going on for me in my work. And actually, the Tourist Board got quite excited about the book.
Did they really?
Yes, at the time, because it really does give a very rich portrait of Jamaica, mm-hmm. all of many parts of Jamaica, and of our, you know, very interesting history. So, you know, and the title, The True History of Paradise, really comes from the fact that it is a physical paradise, Jamaica, mm-hmm. and that when Columbus was first in the Caribbean, he wrote in his journal that he thought he had found the earthly paradise. So, you know, there's a lot that's humorous and I think beautiful mm-hmm. in the novel. It's not, and even the violence, I try to handle it in a way that makes it more easy to read.
Yeah, your portrayals of Jamaica in both the books are absolutely stunning, really. Let's talk about your recent book, The Pirate's Daughter. Mm-hmm. Tell us how this book started brewing inside you.
Oh, and I like that you use the word brewing, because that's exactly the word I use, too.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I actually had an image in my mind of a young Jamaican girl and an older man, not Jamaican, European or American, and I just saw them in this house by the sea, and I felt that a lot had happened around them, and a lot had happened in that house, and the house was in ruins. And then I began to think more about that and decided that I really wanted to write about that setting and that setting was Port Antonio, Jamaica. And the more I began to look at that little part of Jamaica, Port Antonio, the more interested I got in it. And I've been there myself, and it's a particularly beautiful part of Jamaica. And then I remembered that Errol Flynn had been there and had lived there. So he sort of, you know, invited himself into the novel.
And just like he invited himself onto the people's lives on the island.
Yes, really. And so it, you know, as I kept working on it, researching it, writing it, researching Errol Flynn, it really felt like there was some other part of his life and part of his time in Jamaica that wanted to be told.
Mm-hmm. It says in one of the little biographies of you that you heard stories from your mother about Errol Flynn being on Jamaica.
Yes.
Can you tell us
that.
A little bit about that? Women fainting? And
yeah, my mother told me when I was young that he was so handsome that women fainted when they saw him. And I'm not entirely sure whether that's true, but it really fascinated me. Just the idea that someone could be so handsome. right.
Exactly. <yeah.
laughs> But I think, too, that it's that I was, you know, now that I'm older, I think, too, I was drawn to the idea of two such very different worlds meeting, you know, the glamour of Hollywood and a small nation that was really emerging as a nation, beginning to emerge as a nation at that time. And so the story, even while Flynn is in it, and he's sort of a sort of catalyst in the novel, it's really about these two women and their coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who meets him, the young woman who meets him and falls in love with him, and then later on her daughter, and the coming of age story of Jamaica itself.
Mm-hmm. Because this story starts in the early 1940s.
Yes, and so that was the way it's different from the first novel. It really is three decades, more or less, of Jamaica, you know, the 40s through the 70s, or is that four decades?
I think it's three.
Three and a half, whatever.
Yeah, three and a half. Now, how did you do your research about Errol Flynn being on the island? Did you actually go into archives and check into the history?
I did. I looked at a lot of old Jamaican newspaper reports. I also have, I mean, everybody, you know, of a certain generation remembers him being there. His former wife still lives there. In fact, three generations of Flynns have been there. His parents came to live there at one point. He had a daughter who was born there. His grandson comes back and forth to that same part of Jamaica often. I mean, there's still a family home there. So there, you know, and I went and visited Port Antonio, and an old gentleman there took me around and talked to me about when Flynn was there. And so there's a certain amount of memory still of him.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also just read as much as I could about his early life in Tasmania, you know, and just one thing just took me further into researching other things. I really do like researching facts.
Mm-hmm. I can tell.
Yeah,
you're part historian.
Yes, I find historical details very, very interesting.
Uh-huh. Now, can we assume that some of this novel is based on fact?
Yes, the pirate's daughter. Yes.
Yeah, and as well as the politics in it?
The politics in it is very real, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The fictional part of the characters other than Flynn, you know, the Jamaican women characters and the other characters, although one of the characters, the Englishman Nigel Fletcher, is based partly on Ian Fleming, who lived in Jamaica at that time too and was writing all his James Bond novels while he was there. So that's semi-real character. But yeah, everything, so it's part fact and part fiction.
Mm-hmm. Now, while you were doing this research, did you come upon any surprises that you didn't know about your own country?
Yes. Whimsical things and probably more important things. I was, for instance, there's the fact of Captain Bligh, the whole connection between him and the breadfruit and the connection between the South Sea Islands and Jamaica, and that he had been there at that very same little island, Navy Island, that Flynn finally bought and lived on. That seemed an interesting coincidence to me, because of the similarity between Errol Flynn and Captain Bligh,
mm-hmm.
as sort of white male adventurer types.
Mm-hmm. Stealing the hearts of women.
Yes, and their attraction to the tropics and what the tropics have, you know, what that meant in their lives. And, I'm always coming across interesting botanical facts when I'm writing about Jamaica. Things about the OTET apple.
Oh, yes, you mentioned that a lot in this book.
That is a fruit that grows a lot in that part of the island, but that it the word Otaheite was the original name for Tahiti.
Oh, really?
And that I began to spin a little imaginary tale for myself, which is probably partly true, that maybe Captain Bligh brought the seeds of that fruit over too when he brought the breadfruit. And because it is a fruit that's native to the South Seas, not Jamaica.
Mm.
So that all just seemed very resonant to me. Just also in terms of the larger theme of the history of the white Western male in an island like Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
and what he
mm-hmm.
brings there and what he brought there and contributed to the history, but also all the bad behavior that he was also responsible for.
Yeah, you portrayed that quite stunningly.
Thank you. And I think one thing too that dawned on me more and more as I was writing was how little Jamaicans figured in the sort of buccaneering adventure, tales of the 19th century that were set in the Caribbean, and even more so how little Jamaican women feature. In those sort of tales, or the tales, again, if you take it to a wider, more universal scale, of how little the stories of the women who meet that white Western male hero are ever told, like the women who met Gauguin
in
Tahiti. I mean, I'm sure they had a story, too.
You're right about that, yeah. Well,
yeah.
See, that's just a sort of universal. Women have not been written into history in so many aspects of cultures.
Right, and when they are, they're often sort of tales of sort of ghosts and legendary figures and of, lost souls and broken hearts and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So that was another thing that dawned on me as I was writing, and that was really motivating me.
Yeah, I enjoyed the fact that the women, you could actually get into their hearts and minds. That was a rare occurrence, it seems, in a book about a small island like this.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you this. You write short fiction and essays. Is most of your writing centered on Jamaica?
It has been, yes. It has been centered on Jamaica. I mean, I spent, all my growing up years there.
Mm-hmm. And when did you finally leave?
I left to go to college when I was 19, and then went back and forth for a number of years. But I've been in the United States more or less permanently since about 1980, 81, 82.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you will continue to write about Jamaica?
I think I will, because the stories keep coming to me. But I also think that other parts of the world are going to enter more and more into my writing. And I know a third novel that I'm beginning to work on now is not entirely set in Jamaica.
If you're just joining us, my guest is novelist Margaret Cesaire Thompson. She's the author of two highly acclaimed novels, The History of Paradise and The Pirate's Daughter. Now you've absorbed yourself into American culture, I would assume. Do you think you'll ever write about the culture that you have found in your life here?
Yes, I do think so. And, I mean, and it might take many different forms. There's the sort of life I'm living now and the people like me who have maybe come to America from other places. There's the Jamaican-American experience, I think, which is something that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely. I've become very interested in New England.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah. Where I'm living now. But again, the thing that seems to really fascinate and stir my imagination are interesting historical coincidences and meetings of different worlds. Recently, I've become quite intrigued by in discovering a link between Connecticut and the Congo.
Ah, really?
Yeah, and the whole ivory trade.
Oh, yes.
That went on from the Congo, which I always thought more of as a sort of European and a connection just between Europe and Africa, you know, the Belgian Congo. But that,
yeah,
there's actually a place in Connecticut that was sort of involved in all of that, too. So the interesting coincidences like that and the particular human lives that they touched,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That interests me quite a bit. Or the connection between the Caribbean, the New England pirates and the Caribbean pirates. You know, they went back and forth between those two places. So, yeah, and I think, too, I may want to do some writing about London, because I lived there for a little while.
Mm-hmm. So you're absorbing all these different cultures. Yeah. Was it a culture shock for you to come from this little gorgeous island of Jamaica to the sort of stressful, really quick-moving world of well, New England?
Yeah, actually, I went straight to New York City.
My goodness.
That was my first home, away from home, and I lived there for 11 years.
That must have been terrible culture shock.
It wasn't a shock in the sense that, you know, by then I'd seen a lot of American television, and I was sort of expecting things to be very different.
Mm-hmm.
But it was overwhelming.
<I'll> bet.
Because everything was so big.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, just the portrayals of Jamaica that are in your novels. It's entirely different worlds.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now let's talk about the fact that you wrote a screenplay called Photo Finish, which was sold to Oprah Winfrey's Harpo Productions. Tell us about this.
That was for me. It began as a sort of exercise in screenwriting. I just wanted to see if I could write a screenplay, and it, you know, when I finished it, my agent thought it was good enough to show around, and Oprah Winfrey really liked it, and it hasn't been produced yet, and I hope it will be sometime.
Well, what is it about?
It's a completely fictional story, but again, it has some basis in Jamaican political and social reality. It's about a Jamaican-American female athlete and, who is a former Olympic runner growing up in Brooklyn who's had a rather difficult time of her life in her, you know, mid-30s, and she's, you know, her running days are behind her. And she goes back, she returns to Jamaica, a country she left as a very small child, and witnesses a crime there. And the story unfolds from there. So it's a bit of a sort of thriller set in Jamaica and Brooklyn.
And then what inspired this? Was it an athlete that you had met from Jamaica, or what?
I grew up close to several athletes, women athletes, actually, and mainly swimmers. Because my sister was a swimmer, and I grew up close to, you know, families of swimmers, and including one who did actually go to the Olympics. So I was just always very interested in that kind of life. But at the time I was writing it, I started writing it when I was living in London, and I was missing New York a lot.
Mm.
And so just images of New York, of Central Park, of Brooklyn Bridge were, were sort of weighing on my mind. And so at that time I was really moving a lot between London, New York, Jamaica, and actually England comes into the screenplay also. So that was part of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you have no idea when this is going to be produced, huh?
I don't. But I, I just keep hoping, it'll just happen at the right time with the right actor and actress.
Yeah, well, hopefully, yes. I'm going to assume that it will.
Okay.
Now you teach creative writing at Wellesley College. So tell us how you inspire your students.
How do I inspire my students? I hope I inspire them. I combine the teaching of writing, the looking again and again at their own work and editing it and so forth with a lot of reading of great works. Because I think to become a great writer, you have to really be a great reader.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I really do emphasize that a lot. But of learning, I really do try to have my students become confident readers and readers who feel they can critique even the greatest of writers.
Yeah.
That they can look at a story by Hemingway, Chekhov, Faulkner, and be confident enough to talk about where the weaknesses are as well as the strengths, and to learn from both. Usually they are more strengths than weaknesses.
with the writers that you mentioned, I would have to agree.
Yes. but to really, to really look at literary works not as some distant thing that you just have to feel great awe for, but to look at them as writers, mm-hmm. and look at the craft of the writers and what they chose to do. And the other thing is I do try to stress revision, that good writing really does mean rewriting,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't mm-hmm. ever come all at once.
Mm-hmm. Is it harder in this day and age to get young people to want to read? Well, one hears about the demise of reading in this country, especially.
Yes, I hear that all the time, but it doesn't seem to be true. I think people are reading a lot and want to read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure people are reading enough of the old great works. I think there's a lot of reading of contemporary work, mm-hmm. and we see that because there's so many book clubs. Now, so I think the reading itself is strong, but the desire to look back and value the great works of previous centuries might be something that people aren't doing as much.
Mm-hmm. And what writers have you been inspired by in your life? Can you name a few?
Yes, contemporary writers. I have to say Marquez, for one. And V.S. Naipaul, the Trinidadian writer,
mm-hmm.
Nadine Gordimer. I love the writers of the 19th century. They're the writers that I feel I read a lot to learn from them. Edith Wharton.
Oh, yeah.
Is one, for instance. And Thackeray. I love Thackeray. I love the great sweep of his novels. And Virginia Woolf, I have to say, is the writer who inspired me to start writing fiction.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find her fiction very strange.
Well, it was that I was a high school student. I was just writing poetry until then, and I read To the Lighthouse. And the language is so poetic.
Oh, it is. It is.
And so much is accomplished in the language that I just got quite thrilled by what she was able to do in that novel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of her novels are like watercolors, dripping watercolors to me. Now, both of your published novels deal with politics and racism and classism. Do you believe it's the duty of the novelist to make that kind of commentary and to have that in their works?
No, I don't think it's the duty of the writer to have that in their work, his or her works. But, you know, I remember reading something that Nadine Gordimer once said when she was asked a similar question about, you know, her writing and writing about apartheid. And she said she didn't set out to be a writer about the terrible things that were going on in South Africa. It's just that she was a writer, and that happened to be the world that was around her.
Mm.
And so I think it's the same thing for me or for any writer. You want to write, and you will write about the things that are around you, mm-hmm. that interest you.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us, well, we only have about a minute left. Are you working on anything concrete right now that we can hope to read in the future?
Yes, I am. I'm beginning my third novel, and I hope you can read it in the very near future.
No, don't tell me. This takes place in Jamaica.
It's only partly in Jamaica.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, this one, but I can't say too much more about it because it's still in a very formative.
It's percolating.
Yes.
I understand totally. Well, we look forward to this, and I really highly recommend The Pirate's Daughter to all my readers. Please go out and buy this book. It's absolutely fascinating. And I thank you so much for being with us, Margaret.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, and good luck in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.